The Forever GM never stops thinking about how to make games better. If you are one, want to be one, or would like to find one, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Forever GM's podcast, the roundtable where two professional game masters dig into the craft of running games for a living alongside other professionals in the RPG industry. I'm Doc.
And I'm Liv. And today we have two fantastic guests who we've kind of been talking about all season at this point in time. If you ever heard us talk about young dragon slayers.
True.
Today we have Katie Lear, who is a licensed clinical mental health counselor, RPT, RDT, and owner and founder of Young Dragon Slayers, and Jacqueline Lewis, who actually got me involved in Young Dragon Slayers, a writer, game master, and youth worker pursuing a master's in social work. How are you both doing today?
Delightful.
I'm hanging in there. I'm bringing the chaos today. It's an energy. I've been with a two-year-old all morning, and now I'm talking about chaos. It's in my blood. It's in my soul.
That's right.
You're ready for
it. No, my delight stems from having sent my chaotic five-year-old back to school this morning after like a highly chaotic Mother's Day experience. You know, I'm on the up and up. We made it through. We survived it advanced. And I slept in really late this morning, which is unusual for me. So I've got a new lease on life, but I'm glad we weren't recording yesterday.
Yeah, it would have been an interesting Mother's Day in the Doc household.
Would have been a powerful energy.
Yeah, it would have been interesting.
We have just seen your wife come behind you, like, what are you doing?
Today's game spotlight is Crash Pandas. Crash Pandas is a one-shot RPG by Grant Howitt. The premise is simple. A bunch of raccoons found a car. Raccoons barely understand cars. And raccoons have decided to enter an illegal street race using that stolen car. I don't know if it ever indicates, I was looking through the rules. I don't know if it ever indicates that this car was stolen, but I guess if raccoons are in it and it was running, it probably was stolen. That's an interesting thing.
I don't know who would have given the raccoons the car willingly.
Yeah. I guess weirdly when I was reading through the rules, I was like, oh, it's just an abandoned car. But I'm like, people don't abandon working cars. So one player might control steering. Another might control acceleration, another braking, navigation. And just you've got your different roles inside the car that you're trying to do as you win this race. Nobody has complete control over what the car is doing. The game immediately creates chaos through divided responsibility. This is a game where players should be shouting over each other, reacting to sudden problems, accidentally sabotaging one another. It is meant to be silly. It is meant to be lightweight. It is meant to be chaotic and wonky. And it rewards leaning into the chaos, committing to the bit, and supporting the energy of the table in fun and interesting ways. I have not played Crash Pandas. I am bringing Crash Pandas to Origins. Because it's just I think it's just a page and a half or so.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of pickup games, but that's definitely in that list. Has anybody played Crash Pandas?
We played it at summer camp a couple years ago, and it was the hit of the summer. We brought a couple of one-page games like that to play. We had like kind of an overarching campaign for the week, but then we would have these awkward blocks of time sometimes where it's like, do we really want to jump into that for like another couple hours? Or like, oh, we've got a stray 30 minutes. What are we going to do? So we would occasionally pepper in these one-page games. And at the end of the week, I had them fill out a questionnaire of like, what was your favorite part of camp? What did you like the best? And like the overwhelming response was the raccoon D&D. Like everybody was like, the time we did the raccoon D&D was our best part. Forget your campaign, whatever, that day that we did the raccoon D&D. And I think when we played it, we decided that this was a world in which all vehicles are driven by nocturnal animals. So I think that in ours, it was like, there were opossums, there were rats. It was like a busy world of Richard Scarry situation.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I think was what we latched onto, but I don't know if that's canonically accurate.
I love the idea that this is just a thing that is in the world instead of the idea. I also love the idea that this is like a normal world. Not a normal world. Here's my thought when I was reading through these. Recently, I was thinking this is a world in which the Fast and the Furious movies have all taken place.
Like they canonically occurred in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the whole series is done. And Dom has talked about family the whole time and it's all over. And they're like, we need a new film. This is the movie of a bunch of random raccoons who decide to start illegal street racing.
With a crazy idea. Yeah.
The Fast and the Furious.
Love it.
Which I've never said before, but
what better time than now?
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. Your whole life has been building up to this moment and that pun.
Oh, so good. So yeah, we'll have some Crash Pandas. I also actually wanted to talk a little bit about these like little like one-page games that are so fun. There's like All Out of Bubblegum and Dr. Magnet Hands is another one that I've played. Lasers and Feelings is kind of like the better known one. And there's a million permutations off of Lasers and Feelings. In fact, I may or may not have made one. So what's our thoughts? I like to just have them with me when I go to conventions. It's been a while. I like to have them with me just to kind of do pickup games here and there. What are our thoughts on that?
I don't know how many one-page RPGs I've actually played.
Yeah.
Usually everything has like a book that I fully read and then run into.
Liv, it's nice. Oh,
I love me a one-pager. I love the accessibility of it. It's like the... Like the literary equivalent would be a short story where it's like, get funky, get weird. We're only going to be here for a little while and you can have a whole game about raccoons driving a car and just read through it and go. And I think the limitations of the format means that a lot of work needs to be put into it. There are larger books that a lot of work is put into, but you can sort of stumble your way into like, I guess this is a set of rules now. But it's very hard to do that. And when the set of rules only fits in a page and it all makes sense. So I think that necessarily streamlines and makes for a better series of games of the one page RPGs of the world.
I liked this comparison to the short story because I was like, dang, that's probably true. I think I don't know if this is a function of like parenting and becoming more tired or like aging and becoming more tolerant of different things. But I have always been more of a long form person. In general, as far as art and writing is concerned. And only recently have I begun to like accept the poem and the short story into my life of like, actually, maybe poetry is good. Like, maybe it's good. Maybe people like it for like a reason.
Well, that Walt Whitman had something to say, didn't he?
Maybe sometimes it is good. Like, I've really had a block for most of my life with poetry of like, why does it exist? Like, why do I want to read these five weirdly kerned, oddly spaced lines of text? Like, I wasn't into it. And now for some reason at like almost 39, it's really hitting in a different way. And I think that that is probably true for me with gaming as well, that were I a younger player and I had the time to immerse myself in the lore, I would love to do so. And tragically, that's not where I am as a human being at this time. There is nothing to me worse than having to be taught the rules of a game. I just don't want to do it. It starts happening. My dear friend, Maddie, who also works for Young Dragon Slayers, is great at explaining rules. And it's still like, what will happen is like, my eyes will go into soft focus. And then I'll just start, like the jazz music starts coming in, like Careless Whispers starts coming in. And it's just like, I'm just like.
The saxophone starts playing.
I'm transported somewhere else and then I'm back and we're playing the game. And I think that's a common experience for novice players. And I do agree that a game that lowers the barrier to entry while still keeping it feeling like a real game is a rare thing. And I think a good one pager can do that, that you are being kind of dropped in media res into a premise that is too crazy to be sustained in a longer story, but you immediately
they
understand what's going on.
They also tend to be perfect for chaotic tables, which, as it turns out,
so true.
is our topic.
Today, we're talking about Chaos Gremlins or Chaos Goblins, as you would like to call them. If you couldn't tell from us talking about raccoons driving stolen cars for 10 minutes, that's a completely normal, totally normal and non-chaotic topic. All of us have played with Chaos Goblins and Gremlins, especially through Young Dragon Slayers. And so this is a great group to talk about this with. Let's start off with, for this group, what makes a Chaos Gremlin different from your regular rowdy adventurers? What makes them special?
My immediate thought, my immediate thought is like, they don't want to do the thing. Even if the thing isn't what you intend the game to be, I feel like there's layers of that, right? There's the group of Chaos Goblins that are like, hey, everybody, here's the plot. Great, we're going to go do this thing now. And then they go off and do that. And then there's that other layer of Chaos Goblins, like, I'm not going to do that even. I've seen a number of Chaos Goblins, like, I don't feel like doing anything this round. Okay, well, there's a monster attacking you. Yeah, okay. And that to me is like, chaos is what you make of it, I think.
I wonder, tell me if you all think this is accurate in your experience, because in some ways, in many ways, in all ways, I'm actually the least experienced at this table. I get a lot of vicarious knowledge of people running games, but my own experience running games is quite limited. However, I am currently in possession of a group of Chaos Goblins in an in-person therapy group, so I'm getting a lot of immersive experience right now. And I feel like, for one, there's a Venn diagram between Chaos Goblins and murder hobos. But it's like that not all rectangles are squares thing, where like not all Chaos Goblins are murder hobos, but all murder hobos are Chaos Goblins, perhaps.
I have a perfect Venn diagram to share with the group about this that I put in a presentation last year.
I'm thinking of like what defines a Chaos Goblin. And I feel like they're not necessarily murderous, but they certainly could be. But it's almost, you know, I'm also very deep into sort of like neurodivergence and autism land right now in my personal and professional life. And there's this concept in autism of a profile called PDA. And I'm not about to diagnose like Chaos Goblins as autistic beings. That is not my intent. But there's this concept in autism land of like some folks have a real kind of innate resistance to feeling like they're having demands placed on them. And sometimes, even if it's something that they want to do, if it feels like they're being told to do it, their natural instinct is to say, I cannot do it. This is a gross oversimplification. For actual folks who have this personality profile, it is like causes tremendous anxiety and panic and fight or flight. And I don't think that's what we're experiencing with these goblins. But there is a little like whiff of that, of like just an impulse to do the opposite, an impulse to break free of the constraint, even if they're excited about being in the game, of like, I'm going to do the other choice. I'm going to do something that I perceive to be counter to. And then sometimes that is murder, but like not always. Not always.
Sometimes it's saying that your character runs a horse show that's extremely popular in the city. And just that's your whole thing. You know, that's the whole vibe. In my exploration of my own neurodivergence, I definitely have that PDA thing. Kind of get that. And what's by the way, I need to point out that Liv has shared a
beautiful.
This is the colors alone. I'm playing through the Spider-Man Miles Morales right now, and red on black is just a thing that I'm just so. It's good, and yeah. It's a circle. It's a big circle.
Yeah.
And then a little circle inside and like,
oh no. So no, the murder hobos are an island within.
Yeah.
Chaos
so like, yeah. Right. This is actually a presentation I did about why we should let murder hobos murder for a tabletop group that I'm part of, here in Cleveland. But what I wanted to explain with it is that like the gremlins, like murder hobos are just a flavor of gremlin being. And I think that's, you know, something that we often either separate or overlap entirely, but like I feel like in here you have the bard who just wants to like steal stuff from people and only wants to do charisma things. You have the fighter who just wants to be a murder hobo. You have the wizard who wants to only find like the best spells, kind of free run-esque. But the things that I characterize in chaos gremlins or goblins are just like some morally gray actions often. And then again, I think Doc really sums up nicely, like runs away from the plot. They are going to find what they would like to do within that. And we can post a picture of this in the show notes. It's my academic description of what a chaos gremlin is in beautiful font.
Do you think it's generally true as well that like a true hobo is sort of indiscriminate about where they're directing their morally gray actions? Like they will rob the sleeping party, whereas a chaos gremlin, I'm not so sure will. Like it's more directed toward an NPC. Do you feel like that's true, or do you feel like a chaos gremlin can also be aggressive toward the party?
Well, so like,
oh, go ahead.
My chaos gremlins often are just like aggressive to everyone all the time. Now this
equal
also is weird because I have a no PvP rule, so like when someone's like I'm gonna rob from the party, I'm like no, you're not, you're gonna make a different, better decision.
No.
Jacqueline, I do want to hear your opinion on this as well.
To me it feels like a chaos gremlin wants chaos as an end rather than a means. A normal rowdy adventurer is like, we'll do this goofy thing on the way to this other things, but to a chaos gremlin it's like, I am happy playing the game now that I have started this horse barn, or now that I have lit this thing on fire or robbed this guard. Like that is what I'm here to do when I'm having a good time. And I think there's also an element of reveling in subverting the GM expectations of like, gotcha, you didn't think I was going to do that. And I would say some probably see it of like taking an orderly situation and turning it into chaos as like a challenge or a puzzle. I don't think all of them would articulate it that way. But I think there is a little bit of like, oh, I will take this in the direction that I want it to go, which is kind of fun to feed into as a GM of like, oh man, my whole encounter, I didn't think you guys were going to do that, which really, in my experience, a Chaos Gremlin loves being acknowledged.
They do.
Yeah.
They really do. I think that's so funny too, because what we often play with children, that's kind of what our jobs are.
Right.
When I plan encounters with kids, I don't think they understand how much I don't care what the outcome is. And so they'll be like, Liv, guess what I am going to do? And I'm like, ooh, tell me. And they're like, we're doing option Z. Ha ha ha. And I'm like, cool. Let's continue on. Option Z. I don't know what that is, but we're going to go with it.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Later this season, we'll be talking about improv. But if you can improvise, then option C is just what the thing is. I'm going to be the oldest person in the Zoom for a moment.
As you often are, Doc.
Yeah, I know. What the kids call unk.
Unk.
Wild.
Jacqueline's there is cringing so hard.
Just the way of what the kids call unk instead of just saying unk, which would have been its own kind of...
If you have
that
to
was
say
beautiful.
It that,
that
way,
was a gift, Jesse. Thank you.
You already know. Yeah.
But going way back though, like I think the first time I thought of murder hobos were the players of like old school D&D, OSR style D&D games where, you know, these groups of adults or semi-adults were like just systematically going through this dungeon and just murdering everything that was in there. Oh, we missed these five rooms. There could be living things there. Like I can remember like playing in those games. Like, what about treasure? Yeah, maybe that too. And I think it was, I mean, but back then, you know, if I think back to first edition, which I think was where it was more common, but even to some extent in second edition, if the thing wasn't dead, you didn't get the experience points. It was that kind of like, I'm trying to think, I remember there was a game where a game master determined that they found a whole bunch of chickens, and it wasn't D&D. It might've been Earthdawn, I think. And someone determined how much experience chickens were worth and was like, how many chickens are there here? And the GM was like, a couple thousand. It's a huge chicken farm. I'm like, great. I remember hearing this story and going, why are they getting experience for just, you know?
Your arm's going to get tired hitting all those chickens. Like, there is work being done. Doc.
We don't know that Colonel Sanders wasn't 20th level. So
that's so funny because my Chaos Goblins this quarter are fighting Colonel Sanders.
What?
Multiple copies of Colonel Sanders.
What?
In fact, they made his wife angry, and now his wife is fighting all the Colonel Sanders with them.
Mrs. Sanders?
Oh my God.
Yeah, Claudia is her name. I learned that this quarter.
Claudia Sanders? She's here?
Wow. That's hilarious.
Liv, this is amazing. What are his abilities?
Yeah.
I haven't really gone far enough because they're level 18. Okay. So he has 150 hit points, and in one turn, they'll just destroy a Colonel.
Listen,
Sanders.
He has to be immune to fear because he can't be chicken.
That's actually really good.
Cannot be frightened.
That's really good.
Wow, why has that content not made the Instagram yet? God, we gotta get Colonel Sanders
to put it in,
up in
to
there.
Be honest.
It's yeah. Fair. That's fair.
The commoners in this town are also all Michael Scotts from The Office. And the mayor of the town is one of those talking fish that's on the wall, like the mounted ones that talks from like Bass Pro Shop.
Big Mouth Billy Bass, please. He has a name.
They named him Gary, but I'll let you know. I'll let know.
Gary's fine, but we should know. We should acknowledge that his
He didn't
true
spend
name.
4 years going to Big Mouth College just to be called Billy.
No.
Yeah.
No. Dr. Mr. Big Mouth Billy Bass to you.
What were we talking about before I mentioned Colonel Sanders being in my game?
My question is, what's your best Chaos Gremlin story for our listeners? I think, did we answer this question? And now I'm saying what question we're asked?
That wasn't even the story I was going to tell for this question, which is wild to me.
Yeah. Well, what is your best story, Craig Chaos Gremlin story?
I'll start us off, other than Colonel Sanders. My first year in Young Dragon Slayers around Christmas time, we were in a kind of like multi-session combat because these were like chaos goblins. They were murder hobos. And so they just wanted to like destroy an entire like group of rogues and thieves. They were trying to get a painting back. I don't remember if they actually got the painting back. They were not very concerned with the painting they needed to get back whatsoever. One of them had this giant shattery creature that had been following them and had been building up power the entire quarter. And they were like, hey, Liv. And I was like, hey, And they're like, what if this shadowy creature is actually just Mariah Carey, the spirit of Christmas? And I was like, sure. So our final session, they convinced me to fight Mariah Carey, in which we played All I Want for Christmas Is You for an hour and a half, as they just destroyed Mariah Carey. And now it's a requirement every year that Mariah Carey shows up in our last session of the quarter.
Yes.
And in fact, one of my players was like, actually, Liv, I wasn't sure about how I felt about D&D until you did that. And now he's been my player for about 2.5 years.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God.
That's a beautiful Christmas tradition.
Yeah. They were telling the new players about that when they came in this quarter. They're like, just stay till Christmas, because then you're going to fight Mariah Carey.
I'm adding this to the handbook. This is great for retention. Okay. Everybody, it's going to be a mandate now. Everybody has to insert Mariah Carey into their campaign in the winter term to increase player buy-in. Wow. That's amazing.
That I should probably also put into the group chat, but I just forget to put all these random stories into the group chat.
But I feel like that's a good, like Jacqueline was sort of saying, like the true chaos gremlin like yearns to be acknowledged, right? Where like you saying yes to Mariah Carey has led to them being dedicated to your group for years because you were like, I'm yes anding this crazy idea. I love that.
You've gained their loyalty forever.
That's really perfect. Have. One of my groups is pretty chaotic just in general. Murder hobo he. But I had alluded to this. One of them is a paladin. And his role as a paladin is mostly to run these horse shows that he's dictated are extremely popular. And he always has horses. And he like would describe like, oh yeah, my stables have like a few 100,000 horses. And like he kept doing this over and over again. And then like I had them fight a Tarrasque. They're high level. I had them fight a Tarrasque. There's only one. And he rode his horse right up the Tarrasque. He was like attacking the whole, like just dominant. And the outcome of that is that I revealed that he had access to the horse dimension. And the rest of the group was like, well, of course he does. Nobody was like, that's bonkers. Nobody had Jacqueline's reaction of like, what? Everyone was like, yeah, sure, of course. The other thing I'll say about that group is, as much as they try to blow up the city of Waterdeep and other cities as often as they can and kill everybody, they befriended a goblin really early on. And that goblin became a chef. That goblin's name is Spank. Because anytime in any of my groups, when there is a goblin befriended, that goblin becomes named Spank. And so Spank's is a series of very high-end restaurants throughout the city of Waterdeep. When it was revealed that the dragon who was basically trying to ruin all their assets after they'd been away for several months had been led onto it by Spank. So Spank steps out and like, I'm the one that betrayed you. I'm like, they're going to kill Spank. And they're like, oh, okay, that's fine. No, immediately forgave Spank. Like,
anything for you, Spank.
It's all okay. Good. And I was like, wait, aren't you mad that Spank? Nah, he probably had a good reason for it.
It's hard out. Times are hard out there. You know, the restaurant industry is cutthroat. It's, you know, yeah, stressful.
So I hope they never figure out that they have access to the horse dimension and the restaurant industry is having some trouble.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
IKEA meatball. Yeah.
Hey, Jacqueline, any fun chaos gremlin stories for our listeners? I know, Katie, you said you were immersed in chaos right now.
I'm in it right now, and I think the physical experience of being in an embodied room with chaotic children has been interesting and something that I've continue to adjust to that, like, I don't know, I'll be looking at my notes and then I just look up and it's just like feet where the heads should be, feet around the table, like everybody's just upside down, and I'm like, why? They're like routinely falling out of their office chairs, which do have wheels on them. But I'm like, the rate at which it's happening is shocking to me, that like they just cannot be contained physically by the room. Or like, we all have dice trays, but are they used? They're not used.
Oh,
they're not. The dice are flying.
Yeah.
So we've had to like be like, we do need to use the dice trays for many reasons. But one of them is that you lean over to see if the dice did a good job on the floor, and then you do fall out of the chair. So like, for safety reasons, I do have to require, like, I don't even care about fudging the rolls. Like, someone's gonna have a head injury if we keep doing this. So like, that's been interesting. I feel like the true chaos stories that stick out for me, though, are from like earlier days when I've been observing other folks' groups. We had a group in our summer camp last year where the DM running the camp had created this genuinely delightful week-long campaign, all homebrew, lovingly crafted, about an air balloon race where they were going to fight a dragon. Like the dragon comes in and like interrupts. Gosh, I hope I'm remembering this right. Sorry, Joe, if I butchered your story. The dragon comes in and they do like a mid-air flight with a dragon from their hot air balloon. Yeah. What a great concept. We love this. They were like, absolutely not. Forget about the race. We don't need to get there. We take the hot air balloon and we're hopping to another dimension where Adam Sandler is. And they were out of there and he had to scrap his entire campaign. And I was like, I need you to know that I don't expect you to write a new campaign. Like, if you are okay. And he was like totally down. He's like, yeah, man, we'll go to the Adam Sandler dimension. I don't know what it is, but we'll all find out together.
The Sandlerverse.
The Sandlerverse. And so what it was that there was an Adam Sandler. It was populated by the Adam Sandler, like Adam Sandler's characters in all of his films. So there was like Waterboy Adam Sandler and like, you know, Cafeteria Lady Adam Sandler. It was just all of them together. Like and then there was some Jill sort Adam of all of them. And then there was some sort of, I think, a final boss Sandler situation. I don't know. But like that feels very Chaos Gremlin to me, of like benevolent, but just fundamentally allergic to the plot of the game. And then we also had a session in one of Zach's early groups that I often use as an example of chaotic behavior when I'm screening new players for the program that I called the Lickening, which was like there was one session where the party was exploring a castle and they were walking through a room that was really supposed to be, I think, incidental to the story. It was like a library study room. And like we had anticipated that they would clear this building within the session. And what ended up happening is that all of them started picking up objects in the room and licking them. I'm going to pick up this paperweight and I'm going to lick it. What happens to me? Nothing. Okay. Well, I'm going to pick up this book and I'm going to lick it. What happens to me? Well, nothing. So, you know, it tastes like paper, right? What if I pick up this spoon and I lick it? All of them for 90 minutes, 90 minutes spent the session licking things in the room. And sure enough, by like the first few, we're going off the book and nothing happens when you're looking this stuff because there's nothing of note in this room. By like lick number 10, it's like, you have a curse now. Like that was a cursed object. And they were like, yes, right. They wanted it. Like they were like, wait, yes, like amazing. Like, what does it do? And then of course, once one person gets cursed, like now we all got to keep licking stuff. Like, you know, what else is in there? And I don't know that anything else ever came of it, but like that was another moment where I think, yeah, you've got to hold the plot so loosely because you could see it as being an affront towards what you've planned. Mm-hmm. Like the kids running away in the hot air balloon or the kids taking a session to lick stuff. I feel the tension now of like, well, I want to give you a good story and I've got this other thing to do. But I think in both of those cases, the DM was wiser than me and leaned into it. Yeah. And it really did feel like in a way it was a bid for play from the players. It was just not coming out in the way that you would expect.
Sometimes you got to kill your downlines.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
That is very well put. I simply don't plan more than one session in advance anymore because I've just been burned so many times. But also there is a delight in having your weird idea being embraced. I have the picture of the ultimate chaos gremlin in my mind. It's one specific player who was in my very first Young Dragon Slayers game 3 years ago and is still here. And I literally went through my notes. I take perhaps too meticulous notes, as Jesse can attest. And I found the ultimate example of this particular, at the time they were a tween, now they are a teen.
Wild.
Yeah. For reasons I simply don't have time to get into, they're playing Gandalf. Gandalf.
You know him. Yeah.
Currently has 3 Infinity Stones and an iPhone 16. That's essential information going in.
Except those.
We're playing this adventure. It's adapted from Mage Hand Press's The Last Owlbear. They have to save like the last T-Rex. They're in battle with it. They're going to bring it back to an alchemist to save the species. So Gandalf climbs inside the T-Rex, grabs a vial of his stomach acid, and uses the space Infinity Stone to teleport out of the T-Rex. And then successfully befriend it. T-Rex told them there was another group trying to capture it. So the party decided they were going to take a shortcut through a field of giant anthills filled with Ankhegs, who are like these burrowing, acid-spraying creatures. They spent like 20 minutes coming up with a plan to deal with the Ankhegs. There's a lot of deliberation, a lot of, well, I have this spell and I have this thing. I also cannot explain why, but they're traveling with Tom Nook from Animal Crossing, Big the Cat from Sonic the Hedgehog, Ginyu from K-pop, Demon Hunters, and a tiny dinosaur that can turn people into gold. So what Gandalf does is he uses plane shifts to bring them all to the preschool plane so that they can be safe and they're not going to be attacked by the Onkix. Then he goes back, turns a alarm on his iPhone 16 to alert the Onkix, who come to the top so the sorcerer can cast Meteor Swarm, who currently measuring everything out on the virtual tabletop. Kill all of the Onkix but one. Monk kills the last one in a single turn because they're a monk. So Gandalf's like, great, my plan worked. Here's my real plan. Cast Time Stop, grabbed a Sharpie, and gave everyone like silly mustaches and cast Cloud of Daggers, pinned down the remaining Onkix with the daggers, unpaused time, pulls at his quarterstaff just to say, you shall not pass, and bonks it for its remaining like 2 hit points. The NPCs come back from the preschool dimension. We're like 10 minutes over the end of the session. The dinosaur that turns to gold got the recess crown, and I, a 30-year-old person, am singing on top of spaghetti in the voice of Biggs the Cat, yes, as they're falling over laughing. And it was maybe the best session I've ever had.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. I love these stories. The one thing I will think of, the Sandlerverse made me think of this scene, another game by Grant Howitt. And I was like, sitting there, guy, I bet this is Grant Howitt, called Jason Statham's Big Vacation, where Jason Statham decides to go on vacation and the players are other versions of Jason Statham trying to stop Wesley Sniper from ruining his vacation.
The Wesley Sniper!
Amazing.
Then and I'm like, oh, that Sandler version of that has to be feasible. And the other thing it reminded me of, and I had forgotten, maybe my biggest Chaos Goblin moment, one of my groups, when I first started playing with them, decided they were going to eat everything all the time. And so I implemented D100, the flavor dice. That's the percentage of how tasty something is. I told my other groups about it, and some of the groups are just like, oh, great. Now when we eat things, one of my players likes, his character likes kebabs a lot. So he's like, I'm going to turn this into kebab. How was it? And they roll. Another group hadn't really done much about it. And then this past week was like, hey, we're going to eat this. And like the first time. And I'm like, why are we? Oh, okay. And like, and they're like, you've got those flavor dice, right? I'm like, I do. So I rolled it and it was a 97. I'm like, oh, this is the only time they'll eat anything. And they're very happy at the result that they got. I can't even remember. Oh, it was Grell. It was a Grell. It was the weird like brain tentacle things that have beaks. It was a Grell is a 97% good, tasty.
Are Chaos Gremlins bad? My answer is no.
Yeah. Aww. Is a storm bad? Like, it's
well,
it
depends on the type of storm.
Right. Like, you know, a rainstorm can help things out. Also, like, it can ruin a picnic. Like, I think it depends. I think, though, that you can often adjust for, like, I think what we've heard in all these stories is that we're adjusting for this chaos that these other players, we're telling a collaborative story and they're part of that collaboration. And if we let them be part of that collaboration in the way they want to engage with it, then it can be an awesome thing.
One of the big things here is it really depends maybe on the type of GM you are and like what your expectations are in session zero too. If you are a like very by the book, very rigid GM, which is okay, and you have a session zero that says, you know, we are going to play the game, we're going to be on plot, we'll be focused, and then you have Chaos Gremlin comes in and changes everything up, that might want to be a discussion you have with your players, right? Like some of these things we should talk about at the beginning of the game and come back to over time. But I know in my session with the kids, like when I talk with them, they're like, we do want to do chaos. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be prepared for chaos then. That's what we're going to do. But for like those who are doing it professionally for adults or for children, that's something you would hopefully establish at the beginning is what is the level of chaos here? How much will I have to kill my darlings, as Doc likes to say, throughout this game?
Yeah, I think it's just being a Chaos Gremlin is just having a particular way of engaging with the game, the same way that like being a rules lawyer is a particular way of engaging with the game. And so, of course, it's not an inherently bad thing. It may be a match or a mismatch for a particular group, and there are pros and cons. You know, the chaos can leave a GM struggling to pull things together, and sometimes it can get other players frustrated or break the momentum. But then on the other hand, it's so fun, and it builds camaraderie and eases just the tension that sometimes builds of taking something too seriously. And it just gives opportunities to like roll with the unexpected and go outside your comfort zone a little bit. So I do not think it is bad in the slightest.
Yeah, I agree. I say that Chaos Gremlin energy is just a normal variant of gameplay that can be welcomed and encouraged, provided that it is not disrupting the group dynamics for the rest of the group. So something that I try to do when I'm matchmaking players for groups is I try to generally divert chaos-leaning children into chaos-leaning groups and generally divert kids who are interested in playing a more lawful style of play into groups of others like them, because I think, especially with children who may be a little less flexible in their approach to the game, it could be really frustrating if you are somebody who is interested in following the plot to have one or two players in the mix in a collaborative game who are just actively not interested in that. Or it could be a great learning experience for all of you. Like, depends, right? So as long as it is not getting in the way of others' enjoyment of the game, I think it can be great. I am experiencing in my chaos group that although they thrive on the chaos, it is also sometimes interfering with their own enjoyment of the game, because they also do have a desire to like level up and get to the boss battle. And I do what I can to adjust to make those things happen, regardless of where they take the narrative. But there are times where the game feels slow to them and like nothing is happening. And I think that is sometimes because they defy railroading. they don't want to be taken in a direction, but then they end up not going, right? So I think that's something that I'm trying to balance with my gremlins, is how do I meet this need and connect with them in this way, but also make sure that the pacing of the game is still engaging and satisfying.
I think too, like, are chaos goblins good or bad? I'm thinking back to that sliver that I was mentioning of murder hobos that's just outside that circle, that are like, you know, we're going to systematically just murder everything in this dungeon. And I thought of a story where I was playing with a group like that as an adult. At one point, you know, I was playing this good character and they were just like, okay, well, let's just murder all these orcs. And I was like, no, like, I don't like this. And just decided to stand up the group. And it was like, we got in an actual argument. I mean, it was a whole thing. Oh, it was a big thing. But I remember at that point thinking, I'm playing this character the way that I've conceived this character. These are people. And, you know, to them, they're like, oh, they're just orcs. And like, but does your character know? Does the person that you want to be? And I think that's what it is. It's like, sometimes the chaos groblins.
Groblins sounds like a great animal.
Honestly,
actually,
I'm going to call them groblins for the rest of the show.
Chaos groblins unite.
Like the golden doodle of small creatures.
For some reason, I'm thinking like little cute Josh Grobins for some reason. Like, that's what they are.
The chaos groblin, but it sometimes they're just being true to themselves, and sometimes they're just being true to the character as they envision it. That's the kind of energy I want to see at a table. Whereas it's not something that has been it's not something that has been encouraged all along through this hobby. In fact, I think it's maybe been discouraged for a lot of it. We've talked about Adam Sandler showing up in Mariah Carey. The entirety of pop culture is at the fingertips of the players that we have sitting at our tables. I think we all recognize that. Letting that be true to it, while not being, as long as it doesn't ruin the fun of anybody else at the table. How do you distinguish between healthy chaos, fun energy, unexpected ideas, and disruptive chaos? Hey, I do feel like we're answering these in reverse.
We are kind of going in reverse. Yeah, this is one that, like, to give some context to, I work with chaos goblins a lot. And sometimes it is really healthy chaos and fun, but sometimes it is just someone who is, like, starting a chain reaction of conflict around the table.
Yeah.
So there are some, like, negatives, I think, as well. And, you know, setting expectations are really good. But I did want to know how in each of your groups you deal with that, because I have answers, but I'm also the co-host of the podcast, so people have heard me speak. So
I think a lot of the quote-unquote chaotic players are like used to being told to like rein it in, be quieter, be calmer, stop talking, stop being annoying. Like, that's something that they hear a lot. So I, especially with young players, try to frame it in terms of like behavioral effects rather than behaviors themselves. neutral chaos is fundamentally different from like name calling or something like that, of like, oh, you are trying to do this, but so and so really did want to go in this hot air balloon. So can you open a portal and drag Adam Sandler onto your hot air balloon? Like, let's try to find a thing. But to let people know, like, hey, this is a cool thing you want to do. Here's the effect that the cool thing you want to do has on the people around you. And we are working as a team here. So let's figure it out. And I think, like Liv said earlier, asking ahead of time what people want to see in a game, doing the session zero run through, really does help get a lot of that out of the way before it pops up.
I know that not all gremlins are hobos, right? And that perhaps all hobos are gremlins. But I've been thinking a bit about the kind of the more aggressive choices of gremlins, hobo or not, and whether or not, you know, we see that as acceptable or desirable in role play with kids. And a common take that I have heard from other folks who run games with kids, not everybody, but many people have said this to me, is like, that the goal of running games with children should be to encourage pro-social role play, that we should really be encouraging non-violent ways of encountering bad guys. We should really be encouraging pacifism. And D&D is actually a terrible game for kids to play because it's inherently combat-based, and that, yes, you kind of, like, back in the day, you were designed to kill the bad guy. And I have some nuanced feelings around that from like a therapy perspective around, is aggression a bad thing for children to express in an imaginary space? I think not. I love, to be clear, I love finding nonviolent ways to resolve conflict. I love, you know, offering therapy sessions to the big bad, which has happened in our campaigns before, or understanding that they have their own motivations and are not a black and white character. I think that there are wonderful times and places for that. And also sometimes it just feels really freaking good to kill something in a game and to do that. And that aggression needs outlets in society. And this seems like a pretty safe one for children. So I was digging into some research on the concept of like aggressive play. As a play therapist, this is something that like play therapists see frequently. Like when you are building a play therapy room and stocking it with toys that your children will play with, it is advised that you have toys in there like a punching bag, a sword, paper that kids can rip up, ways for children to play out their aggression in the playroom as a way of promoting health. The research that's been done on aggressive play and roughhousing and play fighting and all of this stuff is that it actually not only is a normal part of child development to do this, but promotes self-regulation over time. That kids who play fight more are less likely to engage in actual fighting with their peers than kids who don't. And this was more being studied on like wrestling and fighting, but I wonder if the same is true for slightly older kids in this more imaginal space of like, is play fighting the same as fighting? And should we treat it that way? I think not. And I think what we've talked about here of like true chaos energy is a bid for connection, I think is true of aggressive energy in general. The healthy stuff, I think, is when somebody is fighting or being aggressive or doing something unhinged in the service of connecting to the people around the table, versus true aggression would be trying to gain dominance over somebody else at the table. So are they trying to dominate the GM, or are they trying to dominate another character by murdering their pet or killing an NPC that they know somebody else wants to interrogate before they can get there, right? Or like jumping off of the hot air balloon that they know somebody else just flagged down. Is it an attempt at pulling rank, in which case it is not helpful? Or is it a way of actually trying to connect and get everybody excited in the story? And I think that is directable and can be welcomed and leaned into. The stuff where it's like, you keep murdering my precious pets is I'm less interested in.
That was so well put.
Was it? It was long.
It is a really well put answer.
It's a hill I die on. I'm tired of people not letting kids murder stuff. And that clip is going to get out. It's going to ruin my career. They'll be like, this therapist thinks child murder is good. And my
They're
career will be
that
over.
One 10 seconds of our podcast.
This therapist loves murder. I don't know. I treat OCD. So I spend a lot of time telling kids that what they think and what they do are very different things. And so I think to equate fantasy violence with an act of actual violence is a little bit of an oversimplification some of the time.
I often think that people that do that maybe really badly need an outlet of some kind. It's the Grand Theft Auto thing. Like, oh, if they're going to play Grand Theft Auto, they're going to go out and murder people. I'm like,
yes,
What are you thinking in your head, man? Like, do you need help?
Yes. And also, I'm not saying we should be giving Grand Theft Auto to our 9-year-olds, but I also think that hyper-realism is different than what we're seeing in a typical D&D game, where if you say, I gouge the eyes out of the ogre, it is different than throttling a highly realistic person with your bare hands in a...
We're going to carve up the brain monster and eat it. Oh, it was 97% delicious. How nice for it.
Yeah, I think it also just, like, uniquely shows up in games, because, like, I have, you know, I used to box as a way, as an outlet. But doesn't mean I want to go outside and hit someone in the face.
More update for Liv, former boxer.
Not like fighting in a ring, but just like hitting a bag.
That's so cool.
No one hit me. But
still
like,
cool.
Still cool.
But like, no, I think that's very unique to games, though, is that like, if I was to say like, oh yeah, in D&D this weekend, we totally tore apart like this orc tribe. People would be like, oh, weird. As opposed to like, every week I go for 30 minutes and I punch a bag.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, that's good exercise. Like, it's very different the way that we see those between like physical activity versus games, whether they're video games, TTRPGs, board games, whatnot.
I think there's also an element of a kid shows up and they're like, oh, a goblin, let's stab him. And you're like, no, that's bad. We don't do that.
That's
Of just telling them that like being playful and using their imaginations is wrong, and they need to like suppress every version of something that could be violent, which just does, I think, a great disservice to letting people of all ages let things out in the safe space instead of saying, oh, you just shouldn't feel that at all, which is wild.
You let them stab 30 goblins and the 31st goblin, they're going to be like, well, wait a minute, let's see what this guy wants. Like, they're all happy.
Maybe he has a family that we killed back there, but maybe.
When we see this in therapy, too, that like sometimes you've just got to like get through that theme before you're willing to go on to another theme. So, yeah, maybe somebody does just got to like mow down an entire goblin village before they're really ready to start exploring nonviolent, nonviolent ways.
That last goblin's like, but you killed my family. Well, you found a new one. Found family. There we go.
Yeah.
We love the tropes. We are getting towards kind of the end of our discussion. We have two questions left, and I want to open up to you guys as our experts. Do you want to talk about setting expectations and boundaries with players in Chaos Gremlin games? Or do you want to talk about design encounters, which I feel like we've touched on a little bit, but not so much?
Personally, I kind of like expectations and boundaries.
Then how can you set expectations and boundaries with your players around chaotic behavior so that everyone feels safe and engaged in the play space?
So something I've tried in my group is we have had chaotic behavior that has kind of leaned toward disrupting the group dynamic. And it's not a like 100% chaos group. It's like an 80% chaos group. So there's it's a little grim that way. Like we do need to rein it in a little bit. But the first few sessions, the kids were so thirsty for blood that they were trying to start combat with every being. In a way that I was like, I can't even get the quest to you because you keep killing my guys. Like, I'm trying to send you on a magical journey. You have to like not kill me for like a second. And it is a therapy group. So I am also like really trying to teach them communication skills in a way that is more structured and direct than like a recreational game. So like, I actually don't want to reward them for threatening this guy and saying, if you don't give us the quest, we're going to kill you. Like, he's going to be like, that's bad behavior. You're clearly intoxicated. Come back tomorrow and like convince me that you're ready for this job. Right. Like, I want them to learn this. But something I found in that group is that in that way that like there's sort of that allergicness to the plot or that allergicness of feeling like a demand is being set on you. My removing any perceived demand that they cannot be violent and really encouraging it actually substantially reduced the amount of aggressive chaotic behavior that I saw. And there's this thing called a paradoxical intervention that some therapists use, especially in like couples and family therapy. When people are fighting, there is this idea in therapy that if you assign a couple to fight 3 times over the course of the week, that it will actually decrease the amount that they fight. But you've sort of like taken the energy away from it by making it work. And that like trying to fight somebody is actually very difficult. And you might be like, this is silly. Why are we doing this in the first place? Like, why can't we all get along? And so I sort of paradoxical interventioned my group and was like, it's just going to be all murder today, guys. Like, trust and believe. If you can give me 5 minutes to set up this encounter, it's like, I will let you murder things. Like, I am ready. We're going to do it. It's going to be a bloodbath. And they were all like, yeah, like chanting murder and like pounding their fists on the table of the therapy room. I was like, what have I done? But then we got into the encounter and they were like, what if we didn't? What if we didn't? Like, what if we negotiated with these goblins and befriended them instead? They went through half of a round of combat, and the first time one of them took damage, they were like, just kidding.
I find that with a lot of murder hobos, where the second they get hit with something like, ooh.
Two piercing damage? For that reason, I'm out. Like, they were like, I'm done. And then there was, like, nothing the rest of the campaign, or the rest of that session, at least. And so I think some of it was like, yes, they realized that they were going to have to, like, take it as well as deal it, and that was not exciting to them. But also something about it becoming not taboo, I think, did take some of the energy away. I don't know. That was my thought. Paradoxical interventions.
Great term. For me, a lot of expectation setting revolves around utilizing safety tools, which is something that we'll have another discussion on this podcast. But one of the things I was looking at that were boundaries, and I'm like, how do I do that? And I think sometimes boundaries will come up because they're needed. And I remember there was a group that had accused me of railroading them. And then I had a story that took place on a train. And one of the kids was like, one of my players was like, oh, you were getting railroaded. I'm like, you're literally on a train. I don't know what to tell you. But the thing about it is I made that puzzle such a way that they could have found any way of working through that puzzle. And instead, they went through the train one car at a time, complained the whole time that I was like, but you could have climbed out of the train. You could have blown up there was a million things you could have done. And I said that at the end of the session. And then I think that they were a little bit like, oh, like we kind of did that to themselves. And I think, you know, I don't know if that was the right thing or not, but with that group, it felt very much, oh, you gave us a thing and let us do anything. And we did exactly what. Like we didn't think we could go beyond that. So I think sometimes you can kind of put those situations out there where it seems like ABC, but then you reveal like, oh, there could have been any other option. And then the next time they're in any circumstance, they kind of start to think of ways to work a little bit more with their imaginations. But they'll rein that imagination into like the scenario at hand, but it doesn't always have to be a scenario at hand.
My answer to this, a lot of mine come up in our session zero, where we'd establish, like, do we want to be fully chaos? Do we want to be somewhere in between that? I also think there are a lot of rules that, like, my chaos group knows that we've set and have evolved over time. We've added new ones in. So I think someone mentioned this earlier of, like, the problem of having, you know, you're talking to the NPC, but then now someone's, like, cut off their head. We actually now have a rule that, like, if you're the first one to interact with NPC, that's your guy. And so no one else can harm him.
Yeah.
Like until you're done with them, which feels weird. But that's what we have to do because it was happening too often where we'd be mid roleplay and someone would be like, I stab him 5 times. And it's like, okay, we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
Being open with the expectations of your game and allowing there to be one player feedback because my players were like, we really want this to stop. You know, that's how that rule came about. But allowing player feedback and also being open to like adjust your expectations and those boundaries to make sure the play space as it evolves, as you play for longer and longer, is always engaging and safe for players.
Yeah, I think both Liv and Katie touched on the idea of the chaos that disrupts by like undermining what someone else is trying to do. Big thing that I do is state the goals ahead of time. I think all of my games, the goal is have fun. So whether it's we're not going to follow the grappling rules exactly, or we are going to let people go into the Adam Sandler dimension, is this serving the goal? And I do allow PvP in my games, but I have a very wide definition of what PvP means, and it always gets resolved the same way. So whether it's you're trying to steal coins from this other player's pocket, or you're trying to play a prank on them, or you're trying to kill the NPC they're talking to, I say, you can certainly try, or whatever the GM thing might be. It's like, okay, player A, who has decided to disrupt player B, you guys figure out how that works. You guys figure out whether it's like a deception versus insight check for Dungeons and Dragons. You guys decide whether you want to do that. And if one of you says, no, that's not fun, then the answer is no, we don't do it. Which it's really cool because it takes them a while, but then once they figure out that I'm not going to like adjudicate that, they will start turning to each other and being like, hey, it would be really funny if I did this. Would you let me do this if I give you 5 gold coins after or something like that? And so then it becomes about you, the goal of person A and person B is both to have fun. If you guys can figure out how to do that, great. If not, we're not going to do it. Or even in just articulating like, ooh, this sounds like something you really want to do, but I don't think it would be fun for these other players who have put a lot of effort into this plan, but I do want to find a way for you to have fun. So we'll do this and this. And I'm just very like open about like, hey, this is the goal. Here's how we're trying to get there. Trust me that I will try to make sure you have fun because I'm trying to make sure everyone else has fun too.
And stealing that immediately. That's so good.
I actually really like that.
Yeah, it's really good.
My parents did it to me as a child and I hated it. I hated it so much. I'm like, well, he took my toy. And they're like, you have to talk to him about it. I'm like, oh, but you're my mom and he should be punished.
I've heard about that from Hudson.
Is his take on the situation different? Does he feel that he had a right to take the toy and that perhaps Jacqueline was overreacting?
Oh, no, just that parenting style. But he probably felt like he was
justified in the moment.
He probably felt like he was justified. Fun fact, Doc, if you don't know this, I date Jacqueline's brother.
Oh, yeah, I did not know that. That puts so much of the canon of Liv has come out.
Yeah, Liv canon.
Liv canon. I know. I get a lot of canon, so I appreciate it.
The Jacqueline Liv dynasty is the like Young Dragon Slayer's royal family. It's like, honestly, they're like the Targaryens of the realm.
Oh my God.
I don't know. They just have like so far reaching connections and like everybody is mega powerful and like really good at D&D.
That's a dynasty I'm down to be a part of.
I feel like I'm unworthy to be a part of this dynasty.
I do consider, is it weird that I consider it like a lineage, like Liv, like you came to be through like the Jacqueline line? That like
that's kind of like when I was in a
and then you brought
Savannah is part of the Jacqueline lineage, correct? Yeah.
And Savannah is one of my best friend's wives, and so
part of the Jacqueline lineage now. Yeah, I'm sure Savannah will be thrilled to hear that.
It's like a fraternity where you have a big. Jacqueline's my big. I guess I'm Savannah's big.
Yeah. Or like a vampire that sires another vampire. Yeah.
That reference I get.
I don't know how to feel about that one.
Now I'm thinking about fraternity vampires.
In therapy, I call it like grand therapist. Like if I have to talk to my clients about my therapist, I'm like, my therapist, your grand therapist. Like the one that came before you.
For those of you who are listening for the first time, this is Peer Review, where we as nerds talk about other nerds who are doing research into nerd things. And I won't lie to you all, I had to remind myself of this article because we rescheduled this session four times and I picked it out like 3 months ago. But we're going to talk about social conflict in role-playing communities, an exploratory qualitative study by S. Bowman, which is from 2023. I chose this for Chaos Goblins because there's a lot of literature out there about the effects of video games on aggression. And I think like general chaotic behavior in kids. But I think a lot of things that I've experienced we talked about today is that it's a little different in this imaginative play space. But one thing that I do see happen a lot, which we have touched on with chaos goblins or chaos gremlins, is that social conflict can come up between these different ideas of where we want to take the story and the plot. This study, an exploratory qualitative study, did several kind of like semi-structured interviews from a sample of, I believe it was like international, which is also very cool about this. I believe about 30 participants who do vastly different types of play. So there are some people who do tabletop in there. There are some LARPers. There are some virtual gaming. And one thing that they didn't fully talk about, but would come through in these different types of play, is they're also going to have different play styles. The rules lawyer, the chaos goblin, the disengage, however we want to talk about those. So I thought that was very interesting, especially international too, all over the world. So they were trying to really figure out what causes conflict in a game and some of the ways that you can avoid it. And in general, there were a few things. General problems that cause conflict were the types of relationships in groups. So those who are more intimate versus those who knew each other less. There was whether the game was virtual or in person, talking about internet communication specifically causing conflict. And then also they talked about like the creative agenda differences, which I think we've talked about too today. Chaos versus non-chaos, murder versus non-murder, along with some other things. We're talking about bleed in and bleed out, which we don't talk about in this session, but we did record mental health benefits a few weeks ago. We talked about that concept there. And so I want to ask the group, what are some ways that you see conflict amongst your chaos goblins? And what are some ways that you resolve this? Which I feel like we have talked about. Usually when we get to peer review, we have talked about half of the peer review thing itself.
I mean, I was just about to say, like, I think I learned a new one today. So, thanks, Jacqueline.
I really like that, Jacqueline, actually. Like, I usually adjudicate for them, or I'll be like, all right, since this person is having something done to them, they can adjudicate. And they're always like, it will take a nat 20 to do in this skill you're bad at. And it's like, okay, well. But I actually really like the fact that they have to work together to resolve that conflict, especially at this age group.
I haven't had a lot of conflict come up with my groups. And I think one of the things that I think of is that there was a point where they had a plan that they'd all put together. When everything kicked off, most of the group, except for one player, went off and did a different thing than that plan. And that player was a little bit lost. I honestly didn't know how to resolve that. What was interesting about that is after that session, I ended up talking with one of the other players who just sometimes wants to just chat with me about like running stuff. And they came up with a solution for that, where basically it was they were supposed to act as crew of this guy's ship, and they decided to go jump on shore and fight the battle on shore, whereas this one character had kind of built everything off the ship. And this other player said, what if like a bunch of undead come up and crew his ship for him? I was like, oh, yeah, that's actually a really cool idea. So that's what I, the next session I had that, and I opened with this pile of undead just crawled on your ship and is like, what are your orders, sir? You know, and I got to do all these like weird undead personalities and stuff. And we had a good time. And I think that one of the things that you can rely on with Chaos Goblins is if you have a conflict, you can ask another one and say, what's your suggestion with that?
I like that.
That didn't start profound, and I almost got to profundity throughout it.
I think you did. I think you got there. I found this study particularly interesting, I think, because it's one of those studies that really analyzes something that feels intuitive, but in a hyper niche kind of way. Seeing an academic article to be like, in a process known as railroading, which is, you know, a word I've used for forever and would not expect to see in an academic paper. But it was also really interesting to see them really codify how these different things happen. A lot of it is the way that conflict happens in every group scenario of like people not communicating and people wanting different things. But because it is in a very unique world of we are ourselves and we also have players and we're also like player characters and we're also in this game, just has a lot of layers to it. I've had a couple times of differing chaos levels making things particularly difficult. I think the time it comes up the most, because I work with a lot of young players, is when there's an age gap. Mm. The library program, because of the limitations of the library, runs from 6th to 12th grade. And the chaos energy of some of the younger players was really getting on the nerves of some of the older players. And, you know, the younger players are trying to impress the older players. And it's just, it was a cycle of badness that we eventually broke by getting a second dungeon master and splitting into two groups. But it can be difficult, especially because either being chaotic in a group where the other players do not want chaos, or being orderly in a group where people do want chaos, mm-hmm. is very othering. And I've had both. I had a player who was very rigid, like, I want the dungeon master to create the story and I want to follow it and I want to be lawful, come into a group where I was like, well, what do you think the norms around dragons are in this world? And they would go and they would tell me. And that was particularly frustrating for that player. And I had another group that was a little on the silly side. It's the one with Gandalf in it, but ultimately does sort of follow the path. And a true chaos gremlin came in who just wanted to pull a balloon out of their pocket and pop it and just be goofy. Even though I tried to accommodate it, it was tough because the other members of the group already knew each other and then started to get annoyed by the chaos. Yeah, it becomes a social dynamic as well as a game dynamic, mm-hmm. of like, these people don't like this person. Then it gets harder because then it's not just the game you have to worry about.
There's like a really interesting table that I just re-pulled up in this paper about like talking about bleed-in and... It is also funny to your first point, Jacqueline, about they talk about trolling and like out of character and like an academic sense.
They're like, OOC. I'm like, yeah, I know what that means.
Like, I'm very aware of what that is. That's been how peer review has been for me the entire season, where it's just like, oh my gosh, my hobby is becoming part of my job. Not that it isn't already, but yeah, it's really interesting to see how they kind of, as you were saying, like codify that and some of the things that I often see really in these mixed groups. Because I think when everyone's chaotic, everything flows a little smoother. When everyone's orderly, everything flows a little smoother. Yes. But I have groups that are like 50-50. Lots of chaos, we're twerking our way down the ocean versus like, I'd like to follow the plot, please. And that is actually a group I have. But like there, some of the things that I read in the bleed in section, I was like, oh yeah, I can tell you which of my group members have these, you know, conflicts that we have to resolve or have taken steps to resolve because of these. And so that's why I really like this paper. It was one that like spoke to me a good bit in that.
It's funny too, because I was looking at the participant list and there's nothing from any Asian countries in here. And I've
never Asian, never African.
Yeah. I have to imagine that. Oh, I've met D&D players from Africa. So yeah, that's an interesting. That being said, like I've recently kind of taken these deep dives on some Asian, some Chinese and some Japanese role-playing games. The approach to that those games have, these original games, are really fascinating. So I feel like that's a thing to just kind of table and maybe like look into another time. But I wonder if the approaches for like Ruyatama is just almost like a precursor to Wander Home in some pretty specific ways. And it's this Japanese game that, I don't know, it would be really interesting to see that data too. And now I want another one of these studies that does more.
That is always limitations. Particularly, I care about African people because I am one. I'm Ghanaian, but more Olivia lore. But I am part of a like all black D&D group, like Discord server now.
Yeah.
That has like almost 5,000 people. What? And so we can get people together for that.
Yeah, you can find
I promise you can have, we can have research on black and brown people in TTRPGs. That's my passion project on the side, not the Discord, but getting more black and brown people to talk about their love of TTRPGs. Katie, any thoughts that you have on peer review? And then we'll wrap it up.
Just a small one. I think in my baby career as a fledgling dungeon master, my sense right now, and tell me if you agree or disagree with this, is that with these groups that have a high percentage of chaotic players, whether that's 100 or 80 or 70, that I am needing, there's like, you've got the form and the content, right? The content of the game, which is the plot, but then the form of the game, which is our expectations of how the players are playing, whose turn is it to speak and all this stuff. I'm finding that so far I'm having success when I am looser with the form for these players, but that saying, you know what, it's going to be a free for all because everybody's chaotic is not useful. Or like I'm looser with the content, but I'm tighter with the form. Holding on to the story more loosely, allowing things to progress in ways that the module did not suggest, really making sure that I am facilitating wins for them, right? Being looser with the content is helping me, but I find that they seem to be, they benefit from having a lot more structure in the form, that like making those implicit rules really explicit, putting kids in initiative order to speak, making sure everybody knows whose turn it is helping those more lawful players not to get trampled by the chaotic ones who are more likely to talk. And that a lot of the time it is just about making it clear what the goal is, right? And like, how are we going to accomplish that? So I am actually adding a lot more of like, we do put you in initiative order to speak. You are going to get advantage on your next turn if you're ready with what you want to do in combat and you're like ready to go. All of that stuff, but that loosening up the plot gives them the breathing room they need.
Yeah.
I don't know if you found that more structure in some areas is actually helpful for them.
Yeah, I run a lot of my groups, like I ran my classroom. And so we often have a lot of structure in the way that we run the group, but the content can be looser. And so I've noticed the same thing, Katie.
I have borrowed, Liv, your, you know, voting for the most valued player of the game every session, which I think is very sweet. However, they keep voting the NPC.
The goblin has won like 3 weeks in a row.
It's okay. The lizard wins a lot in that one group. Bubby wins a lot.
Bubby.
Yeah. Before we go, let's give our guests a moment to tell us where you can find them. Jacqueline, you want to go first?
You can find me on the social media things as appropriately Wrangler of Chaos. I also have my link tree with all of the various projects and cool things, including Rolling with the Youth, which is the book I wrote about running tabletop games for young players that are safe and fun. Liv is holding it up right now, which makes me very happy.
It has notes.
Where I did chat a little bit about this.
They took notes. The highest compliment I can receive. But that's me, Wrangler of Chaos.
If you have a young person in your life who is looking to play some online D&D, chaotic or lawful in nature, you can find all of us to some extent at youngdragonslayers.com, which is an online community for kids and teens who are looking to find like-minded people through playing the game. So you can follow us on socials at Young Dragon Slayers on YouTube or Instagram. You will also get a lot of Jacqueline on those platforms because Jacqueline is our editorial lead and takes the reins on a lot of that stuff. And then personally, I am also a children's therapist, and you can find my private practice at childanxietycounseling.com. We work with kids with anxiety and OCD in North Carolina.
Thanks for spending time with us on the Forever GMs podcast. If you want to support the show, check out our Patreon for bonus content and behind-the-scenes goodness. You can also find us on TikTok and Blue Sky. We're always looking for your ideas on what we should tackle next. Let me try that again. We're always looking for your ideas on what we should tackle next. Reach out to our socials or email us at forevergms@docpalindrome.com. And remember, Forever GMs never stop leveling up the table.